What we hoped would be a monumental win for American agriculture is turning out to be an American agriculture loss, a huge one. This leads us to ask, did China steal our farm, or did we give China our farm?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1284th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Quebec City who are tuned into the podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, with 1.4 billion hungry people to be fed, the opening of China that began in 1972 was to have been a monumental win for American agriculture. And in fact, China is still the world's top importer of food, which makes some American farmers very happy. But if American agriculture is happy selling food to China, China is not happy in being dependent on America's food. Evidence suggests that China is doing everything in its power to end its dependency on imported food, and that includes taking America's technology. In 2011, the U.S. director for the Beijing Dabei Nong Technology Group, Mo He Long, was twice caught crawling through the cornfields of the Midwest with pockets full of Monsanto and Pioneer seed corn. These creepy crawls through the American cornrows awakened the curiosity of the FBI, which discovered that He Long had been sending seeds to relatives in China for at least 5 years. China's theft of America's ag technology now takes place on an industrial scale, with no secret being left unstolen. And yet many of those secrets were not stolen, but simply given away. A Washington apple farmer told me the story of how a group of China's ag officials were given a tour of the state's apple farms and processing facilities, and how a few years later, China came to dominate the world's market for apple juice. The same is true with other high-value specialty crops like garlic. The transformation of Chinese agriculture over the past few decades leads us to ask, did China steal our farm, or did we give China our farm? Well, who better to ask than Chris Bennett, who is an editor at Farm Journal Magazine. Chris, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, Michael. It's great to be on here with you, and thank you, sir, for the privilege.
So pleased to. I can tell by your accent that you're from New Jersey.
I tell you what, Michael. Close. Northeast Mississippi.
Northeast Mississippi. So pleased to have you aboard. Well, listen, Chris, your article in Ag Web, which is a feature of Farm Journal, caught my attention. Here's the title, ladies and gentlemen. While America Slept, China Stole the Farm. Now, I've been, you know, watching ag journalism for many years, and kind of as a rebel part of that journalism, I'm always amazed when somebody would actually have the courage to put something like that on a piece of paper. So, Chris, what on earth led you to write this article?
I tell you what, Michael, like a lot of people, I went to sleep, and there's hyperbole aside, there's genuine cause for alarm here. And once you delve into the facts, you don't have to go deep to find out that American agriculture and the West in general has made, it appears to be, a Faustian bargain. You know, almost as if you sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the temporary regarding China and the CCP. Again, hyperbole aside, there's genuine cause for alarm regarding the relationship of China with American agriculture.
Well, before we proceed, would you tell us a little bit about your publications? Because you folks at Farm Journal really watch American agriculture closely and are in tune with the temper of the times like few others. Tell us a little bit about your publications.
You bet. There's a lot of sister magazines that go along with the Farm Journal. But on the Ag website, the markets are heavily monitored, well covered. Got shows, for example, video shows run by Clinton Griffiths and Tyne Morgan, really high-quality stuff. They bring on some high-quality people and cover all aspects of the market. And then also, Michael, as time permits, we go in-depth on certain topics. And recently, China has been one of those.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start our conversation about China with the first part of your the title of your article, While America Slept. Why did we fall asleep?
Well, you know, Michael, there's a lot of layers to that cake. If you go back to, you mentioned it in your intro, you went back to the 1970s, and you're precise in that. Let's fast forward a little bit to the 1980s, the end of the 80s, and when the Soviet Union began to teeter and to fall, China was taking copious amounts of notes. They didn't want to become the next. They didn't want to become, you know, the old battered brontosaurus like the Soviet Union and fall. Communism had been ruling in China since 1949 when the People's Republic was established. The Communist Party in China had been around since 1921, with Mao Zedong being one of many founders. So by the time you get to the late 80s, again, they are watching what's going on in the Soviet Union, and they decide to proverbially hop on the democracy bus, and American politicians bought it. There was a sense that if we simply allow them economic freedom, that they will establish their own form of democracy within China, some modicum of democracy at least. And that's not what happened, because they got on the bus with full advanced knowledge of what they were doing. And then, Michael, they got off whenever they wanted to, and that's what they proceeded to do. So the dates are incredible, because 1989 is when the Tiananmen Square massacre happens, and we don't even know for sure the numbers killed, but it appears to be thousands of their students. So they, you know, ran them over with tanks and so on. Just a decade past that, they've got most favored nation status. They've got entry into the World Trade Organization, and it was all done with a wink and a nod. Everyone saying, hey, it's the end of history. Allow them in, and everything will be fine. That is not what happened. So as you roll into the 2000s, and you get this incredible trade imbalance going on, which, as you know, the numbers are staggering. I can't even, maybe $400 billion a year difference. But anyhow, Michael, as you go into the 2000s, they began what was essentially a massive theft espionage project of all aspects of U.S. technology, mm-hmm. and that included agriculture technology.
Yeah. Chris, before we go there, I'd like to back up a little bit, because this notion that we fell asleep, that we're sleeping as all of this happened, I find immensely fascinating and frightening, but wonder, did we fall asleep? Did wishful thinking cause us to fall asleep on China? Were we just hoping that China would grow up and be nice capitalists like we are? Is that what led us to fall asleep on this?
I think so. I think it's that plus combined with just old school money and dollars that they continuously threw at us. And when I say threw at us, I mean all levels of society. Because the striking thing about this, and what must underlie any conversation about present China trade, is that you are talking about the CCP. You're talking about the Chinese Communist Party. And that's a party responsible for millions of deaths over the last 100 years. You know, it doesn't take you 5 minutes on Google to go look up the numbers. It's 50, 60, 70. The estimates go up to 90 million people killed. And Mao Zedong knew full well in the 50s and 60s that agriculture played a heavy, heavy role. And he was perfectly willing to make sure his people had no food in order to control them. So you're talking about the CCP. I mean, you're talking about an organization that, my Lord, just over the last, what, maybe 40 years, is responsible for, I think, maybe 400 million forced abortions, things like that. And regardless of your position on abortion, look that up, and when you realize that's how they're controlling their people, that's how the one-child policy is allowed to reign. Well, they can see now, for example, that the one-child policy is going to boomerang on them. That leads into the desperation for food supply because demography is destiny, as we all know. And you've got all these things swirling now, Michael, and it's morbidly fascinating. But we have to go into this with eyes wide open instead of eyes wide shut.
Well, that leads me to the next question about this business of the United States being asleep. Have we woken up? Are we woke yet?
I don't think so. I don't think so, Michael. And the reason I don't is because in the last 10 years, the amount of ag crimes and IP crimes in general still are played down. We know from the FBI here in the last couple of years, and we also know, you know, the context of the FBI is that they have not bathed themselves in glory here the last decade. They themselves say that they're opening a counter-espionage, counter-intelligence case somehow related to China every 10 hours. And so they...
Wait a minute. Did you say every 10 hours?
Yes, sir. And they also, I believe, Director Ray said that half of their cases, half, are related to China at present. So it's pretty staggering implications.
So... what we see then is that while we slept, we bought everything we need from China and gave them all of our money. China took that money and sent it right back to the United States in order to be in a position to buy, steal, or be given all of our secrets. Is that a fair summation of where we're at?
I think it's a very fair. I think you're spot on, and it's ongoing as we speak. Michael, we can get into this later, but, you know, for example, everyone knows this, but when you go to the House Intelligence Committee, right, the House Intelligence Committee, serving on that committee, for example, is Representative Eric Swalwell from California, with the FBI having told him, and we know now that he had some kind of relationship with Christine Fangfang, with Fangfang, the infamous Chinese spy now.
But Chris, Miss Fangfang was so attractive.
Right.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking with editor of Farm Journal, Chris Bennett, and his article, While America Slept, China Stole the Farm. Are we woke yet? Are we being woken up? Or are we still asleep until it's way too late? This is the Food Chain right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, if you think about it, if there is one vulnerability to China, it's the fact that it has 1.4 billion people on not a lot of land or resources. So it's faced with a prospect that it must either be reliant on the United States to feed its and other countries to feed its citizens, or it must somehow become self-reliant. Chris Bennett, editor of Farm Journal magazine and a writer for AgWeb, While America Slept, China Stole the Farm. What is the intent of Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party with respect to this dependency on food from the United States?
Michael, Xi doesn't roll through too many speeches without at some point mentioning food security. And we know for a fact that roughly a decade ago, I don't have the exact date, but maybe a decade ago, 12 years ago, China declared that they were going to revamp roughly 132 million acres of farmland. I guess you might say they were going to refurbish it. And that was a decade-long plan. And just this year, in 2021, they plan on refurbishing something like 16.5 million acres. Those are astounding numbers. Those are literally, when you start breaking it down, you end up talking about the size of the state of California, the size of the Republic of Ireland. So they know, they recognize that they have to have farmland to feed their people long term. Right now, they import massive amounts of food from across the world, certainly including the United States. But it appears that they are jockeying and getting in position to someday attempt to have a far, far, far greater percentage of their food needs grown in their own country. It's quite a fascinating statistic that if you go back, I think, and these are rough, I don't have the numbers in front of me, Michael, but if you go back to the 1960s and you push on from the 60s, they have built, the CCP has built more dams than the entire world put together. It comes out to be something almost like a dam someplace, somewhere in China, every maybe couple of days. And it's an astounding statistic. And a lot of that water, or at least a portion of that water, will be or is being funneled to agriculture purposes. So when you look and in totality at what they have going on, you can see that food security is way up on the list. And when they made their, I'm going to rattle a few things off that might awaken your listeners to what they've got going on. They've got the Belt and Road Initiative, which Xi plans on establishing world dominion, economic dominion, by 2049. That number should catch people because the People's Republic was established in 1949. So on the 100-year anniversary, they hope to occupy the catbird seat of global economics. And the Belt and Road Initiative means that they have made financial, deep, deep, deep financial investments across the globe, in ports, in countries, bought up farmland as well. And that's just one program. That's one program of an astounding list that should wake up people. Another program is a top 10 program where they have declared by 2025, the program's actually called Made by 2025, something along that line. Anyhow,
I think it's called Made in China, isn't it?
Made in China, okay, excuse me, Made in China. By 2025, they declare that in the area of electronics, electric vehicles, agriculture, that they will be dominant. And there's no hyperbole thrown in there. They mean what they say. So there's a lot of things to pay attention to. When I first started talking, I said that I felt like U.S. agriculture has made a Faustian bargain, and I mean that. It's kind of a devil and Tom Walker situation where you sell your future partially for a bowl of soup. you know, farmers need China. We know they're certainly not an ally, but you have to do business with everyone across the world. But again, you got to do it with eyes wide open, because just because you can get corn and soybeans sold at the price that you need them sold at right now, you know, it appears that China wants to move completely away from U.S. farmers in 30 or 40 years. This is a very, very significant, monumental occurrence on the horizon. We've got to pay attention, Michael.
And that's, there's one more thing with respect to farmland that caught my attention very recently, and that is China's manipulation of weather and developing the ability to make it rain where it typically would not rain. And furthermore, even having an impact on India's monsoons. Now, I don't know how reliable that information is, but it certainly is evident that they are experimenting with weather. So they are doing a lot, everything they can to make what they have more efficient in terms of agriculture. Good. Now, where are they getting the information to do this? They have a program that they call among themselves, picking flowers in foreign lands to make honey in China. What do they mean by that?
Yes, Michael. Essentially, they mean reaching into countries like the United States, certain places in Western Europe, Canada, and taking the good and taking it back with them, taking the sweet stuff, and then opening the ball on that. I believe it was in 2017, the U.S. Commission on the Theft of American Intellectual Property released an astounding study where they estimated that every year, China steals something to the range of $255 billion to roughly $600 billion in intellectual property from the United States. Now, whether it's $255 or $600 billion, the range is incredible. So we know that that is going on. We know, for example, it's a fact that Representative Newhouse, Dan Newhouse, up in Washington State right now, is trying to have legislation added to appropriations whereby he would make it illegal for the CCP or any organization or individual related to the CCP to buy U.S. farmland, because in the last, I believe it's about the last decade, they have acquired roughly 200,000 U.S. acres. And 200,000 U.S. acres is truly a blip on the radar. But the point is that if you extrapolate from their own, and you extrapolate from what has happened, what they've done since the 1980s and 90s, that 200,000 acquired in the last decade could become something, again, something gross. And so he's got legislation on the books. Supposedly it has bipartisan support, and we can at least cut off that particular avenue. But you can imagine, right? It doesn't take much extrapolating to figure out, okay, if they bought 200,000 acres in the United States, what do they own in other parts of the world? And it starts to become a little bit numbing when you think of it like that. Yeah. We've got rye seed that was stolen in roughly 2013. We've got corn seed that went out in 2011 and 2013. Got an algorithm that went out a couple of years ago. These were FBI cases that were prosecuted or still in the process even of prosecution. And when you see those kind of things and you see CCP-related individuals literally going into American fields and being caught and American labs, then you know that you are just looking truly at the tip of the iceberg. That should be cause for alarm for anyone in any Western country. And yet this goes on. It's happening as we speak.
Because we're sleeping. Avenues. Because we're sleeping, right?
You're right. Absolutely, Mike. Look, we've got anywhere from 300,000 to 400,000 Chinese students that come to American universities every year. The number this year, I think, is close to 360. And you can bet your bottom dollar that 100% of that number is vetted before and on return to China. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't.
Now, Chris, Chris, you made mention of the fact that there are 90 million members of the Chinese Communist Party who have all sworn an oath to be totally faithful and subservient to the death to the Chinese Communist Party. 90 million of them.
Right. Correct. It's a numbing number, Michael, and that's where you get the students that come here from. So the vast majority of the students from China that show up in American universities come from CCP families. And again, they're vetted when they get here, before they get here, and they're vetted on return. So what the CCP does in general is use those students to watch each other, and then they watch the professors that are incredibly numerous in American institutions, research institutions, and university systems. So in other words, everyone is watching everyone. And let's just say, I put this in the article, that if only 1% of the 360,000 is involved in direct espionage, that's still 3,600. And if you were to say, as many people told me off the record, they thought the number of students involved in espionage is 30% or 40%. Some said even higher. Once you do that math, it gets a little bit dizzying. And not only are they using the 360,000 students here to extract information, but they have different Chinese like sub-institutions, such as Confucius Institutes, set up inside the university system. And all of this is funded by dollars pumped into our system. In other words, they're crossing our palms with silver, and it has worked. It works today. And if you go on and say, hey, we've got 360,000 Chinese students here, nationals, what's going on? Probably you'll be accused of some degree of racism or of alarmism. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fine. You can accuse anybody you want of anything, but look what's in front of your face.
Chris, we should instead of calling it alarmism, we should call it alarm clockism.
Right.
Because that's exactly what we're doing. Ringing the bell, waking people up. Now, we have students, 360,000 of them, turning over every rock in America looking for information. We also have a program the Chinese called their Thousand Talents Plan, in which they actually purchase researchers throughout the world. And under contract, secret contract, you can't tell anybody that you're under contract to the Chinese Communist Party, but you are. Tell us a little bit about the Thousand Talents Plan.
You know, Michael, you really nailed it with the way that you put it. You said they basically purchase researchers. Again, you nailed it. So they've spent, since the early 2000s, it appears they've spent several trillion dollars on buying researchers. So, for example, Michael, if you were researching something in agriculture or any other industry that they wanted access to, they might come to you and ask you, hey, would you like to come over to Beijing or a Chinese city for 3-4 years? We'll pay you far more than what you make now, and we'll give you tremendous funding to do the research that you want to do. And meanwhile, of course, they get access to everything that you've done in the past and what you discover while you're there. And the numbers that they've, of these researchers, which we know is 40, 50, 60, 70,000 people, who knows how many, really, have been a treasure trove of information for them. Because as you said, a lot of it is secret. No one knows exactly who is doing what, and that's just the way you want it. And that web those roots go into the American university system as well. And that quite often means to land-grant universities like you have in California, Texas, Mississippi, you know, literally universities that are related to farming or agriculture.
Tell us about Texas A&M. Tell us about Texas A&M.
Michael, that was quite a case there. I don't know the background as to why and what exactly A&M did, but they tried to take a look to find out how many in their faculty, their staff, were somehow related to that talents program in China. And please don't quote me on this. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it was something like 100 of, they discovered 100 people, and then I think only a handful of the 100 had even admitted what was going on. So that was a drop in the bucket case. If we looked at other universities, would they be similar to A&M? I would put money that many of them would not be that extreme, and some universities would be far more extreme. So it doesn't bode well for the extraction of intellectual property from the U.S., particularly when you relate that to farming. Now, Michael, there is a representative from Arkansas.
Wait a minute. Can you hold that for just a second? We have to take a break, and I don't want to interrupt you in the middle of a great story about a representative from Arkansas, the Deep South. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. With us today, Chris Bennett, an editor at Farm Journal Magazine and Publications, and in Ag Web, he wrote an article called "While America Slept, China Stole the Farm." Wow. Right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Business owners, get money you need in 2 to 3 days at BusinessMoneyToGo.com. Business Money to Go is a network of reputable small business lenders that compete to lend you money. When you qualify with a one-page application, Business Money to Go will get you the best loan at the best rate in 2 to 3 days. Get $5,000 to $500,000 in 2 to 3 days at businessmoneytogo.com. businessmoneytogo.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. And that pretty much goes with just about everything. And we've been buying just about everything from China because it's cheap. But what happens with all of our money, the trillions of dollars that we send to China for their cheap stuff, comes right back to the United States, where it goes to buying off those that have the nation's secrets, and that's how China becomes the owner, the new owner of our secrets. We fund this research in our research institutions. Our researchers give that information and those secrets to China. Am I wrong, Chris?
Yes, sir, Michael, you are correct. And the solution, you know, solutions to that.
But first give us the story about your Arkansas representative.
You bet. I was saying solutions have been bandied about, and one of them offered up is by Representative Rick Crawford, congressman from Arkansas. And Crawford keeps his finger on the pulse of American agriculture. He has something called the AIM Act, the Agriculture Intelligence Measures Act, if I've got that right. And he is proposing that USDA slip in an intelligence office. When I say slip in, I shouldn't use that. Everything would be up front. But he's basically saying that USDA needs an intelligence office to help monitor U.S. agriculture-related technology. And, you know, to take a government bureaucracy like USDA and expand it is not something that your average American wants to see, because we all know that once government expands, it continues on and on. However, in this case, considering what China has done over the last 20 and 30 years, you know, this is not the time for navel gazing, and it's not the time to twiddle your thumbs. Someone has to do something. So Crawford and now Tom Cotton as well, Senator from Arkansas, are pushing the AIM Act. And I frankly don't know the details, but at least it's a start. It's a point of recognition. And Crawford is very sharp. Like I mentioned earlier, Dan Newhouse out in Washington State is trying to ensure that at least the CCP won't legally be able to purchase U.S. farmland. I think Chip Roy in Texas has done something very similar. So in that regard, when you have these politicians that step up and try and get a grip on the situation, that's very, very good. But you still have an entrenched situation. And that's putting it mildly, whereby a lot of people would say, well, you know, the cow's out of the barn and there's no getting it back. And what I mean by that is, you know, you just saw, the date escapes me, but within the last month, the Biden administration dropped prosecution on 5 researchers that essentially had been rung up by the feds for theft of American intellectual property. And they just basically pulled the plug on that investigation. I mentioned earlier Swalwell. He literally sits on the Intelligence Committee with the gentleman I mentioned before, Rick Crawford. It's bizarre. And what's really interesting, what really throws quite a fascinating light on the Swalwell and the Fang Fang deal, is that Fang Fang came to the United States as one of the 360,000 students per year. She started out in California State University out there and recognized it was a honeypot operation, and she recognized Swalwell's rise. She helped raise money for him. and hitched on to his wagon. Now, that was, I believe, in 2011, 2012, right around in there. She essentially boards a plane in 2015 and flies back to Beijing. Now, the FBI have been investigating her. She's allowed to get on a plane. She leaves. And to this day, you know, supposedly no one even knows where she's at. But the powers that be in D.C. continue to allow him to sit. Now, there's only one reason that he's on that committee, and that is that somebody knows something, somebody's scratching somebody's behind somewhere. But that's the surreal nature of this whole conversation.
But it seems to me like it goes much further than the Chinese hold on our politicians, because I also think it extends to the Chinese hold on our oligarchs of industry, because I think they have been told, if you want to do business in China, which has a market five times larger than the United States, then you must obey our wishes.
You're spot on, Michael. Just look at the way the NBA has kowtowed. Look at the way Hollywood is kowtowed. And that's all done, of course, in the name of the dollar.
And Nike, course, Nike clothing and IBM and Apple and everybody. Oh. It seems like... Now, do you see anybody standing up against China? And except for those few politicians that you just mentioned? Do you see anybody from American industry standing up and saying no?
You don't see many, and the reason why, this is pure projection on my part, but I think I'm in the ballpark. The reason you don't see many is because they are all compromised to some degree. And what I mean by compromised is that people in across industries have had trips provided to them. They've had niceties taken to Beijing, shown this and that. Relationships have been established.
You could call it they've been fang-fanged.
right. Just get on Google and look up Mitch McConnell's relationship with China regarding finances, and your jaw starts to drop. And some of this becomes understandable, and you can see why very few people take the pulpit and bang the shoe, because they don't want that same light put on them. They don't want to have to be accountable for their own behavior over the last 20 years. And that certainly applies to university heads, university presidents, and on down the line, leaders of various organizations. I mean, you mentioned that you had a fellow you know from, I believe you said Washington in the Apple industry up there. That's a great example. When these Chinese groups come through, nobody really knows what is going on when those kind of things happen. We all nod, we smile, and we pray that nothing got
taken. And above all, I think we're just trying to be gracious hosts.
Right.
Here, let me show you what we do. This is how we do it. This is why we do it. If you do it that way, you're going to be in trouble. But if you do it this way, it'll work just right. And
you're absolutely right, Michael. The people that tell you the blunt truth are the dissidents themselves. In other words, Chinese people that are truly freedom-loving, those of them that are here now, when they come on shows, they speak bluntly, and you know, so many times you don't see them pop up again because people don't want to hear it. And again, that leads back to the almighty dollar.
So if you were to go on a legacy television network and say the things that we're saying here today, it would probably never see the light of day. Nobody would ever have the opportunity to see it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Michael. You'd probably be shouted down as a proponent of jingoism, something to that degree. But the numbers speak for themselves. The things our own FBI admits speak for themselves. know, who you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? That's the stage that we're at. And as we started this conversation, the point is that things are not going to remain the same. In other words, China plays the long game. You know, an incredibly sharp country. There's no way that the CCP stays in power since 1949, unless they are razor sharp, Machiavellian, and capable of X, Y, and Z. And that is exactly who they are. They recognize that maybe by 2049, they indeed will be in control. And food security is right there on the top drawer as the issue that they know they have to cover. So if you pay attention to how they're treating food security, it tells you a lot about how they treat everything else.
And how they will treat us.
How they will treat us. I Michael, you could probably do 4 or 5 shows on Chinese demography, which I alluded to minutes ago, and that is that their one-child policy, right, has destroyed the family tree. In other words, the family tree doesn't have branches. So they're going to get to the point where that, or they're getting to it now, where it swings back, and they're going to need people to have more than one child, 2 and 3, just to play catch-up. So they're not on a bed of roses. They desperately need the West. And the truth is that at this point, our markets need them as well. And our markets need their products. That is the bargain that
we're both hooked. Sides yeah. made. That's the bargain we made. Our future for our present. We'll take the cheap food or the cheap products, and we'll give you our future.
Michael, when you were a kid, when I was a kid, if we walked into the store to buy a pocket knife, just a pocket knife, or a wrench, the assumption was that that was made in the United States. Literally now, your assumption, right, when you pick up something like that off the shelf, for example, at Walmart, is that it is not. So that's how far we've come. It's not just a numbers game. It's a complete turning of the psyche, or it's the zeitgeist of the day. Our assumption is that if we are using it, if like the clothes that we have on right now, something among that is made in China. Truly astounding when you go back and you think, okay, this just happened over 30 years. Well, if that 30 years, that window that we're referring to, back to roughly 1990, if that is revealing, then let's extrapolate, push out to the next 30 years and say, what does that hold? How much change does that hold? And it's very interesting because that takes us almost right there to 2049. And you don't have to do much reading to see that not only are they changing the infrastructure of their country and their food security, but they're also ramping up their military like nobody on earth almost. Their military budget is only secondary to ours. The U.S. is the only country that spends more on their military than China. China's ramping up their Navy, and again, they play for the long haul. They are fully intentioned in everything they do. And Xi Jinping, as you know, incredible as it is to say, is in a stronger position, arguably today, than Mao Zedong was, because Xi has a military second only to the U.S., or very close to that, and Mao Zedong never had that. That's some food for thought right there.
And you know what's really mind-boggling, Chris, is that they're doing it all with our money. You know, in looking at this, I'm wondering, do we have any secrets left? Do we have any secrets left there that have not been stolen?
That's a heck of a question. It's a very chilling question. It's something we have to ask ourselves, because you look at the condition of our federal agencies, their credibility, particularly over the last decade, and you have the continued subsidence in American faith in those institutions. And we see case after case of extreme incompetence. And then you look over and you realize, okay, Xi Jinping is sitting there telling us, he's telling us that he has an entire military command, a literal military command dedicated to cyber theft. Xi Jinping, since maybe, 2015, 2017, instituted a military-civil fusion. If any of your listeners want to look that up, it will literally send a fright through them. In other words, whatever happens in private industry in China, that technology, by law, automatically transfers to the military. So that's the civil-military fusion. It just ties everything together and makes the power of the CCP that much stronger.
And that, of course, applies to the research being funded by the United States at the Wuhan Virology Institute. All of that research, everything we learn by cooperating and working together, goes straight to the Chinese military. Chris Bennett, editor, Farm Journal, and the author of the AgWeb piece, While America Slept, China Stole the Farm. Thank you, Chris. And ladies and gentlemen, please remember Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for the privilege.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.